Good morning. Welcome to Network Outdoors, the podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Molson, and today we are here with a returning guest, very special guest, and also a Network Outdoors pro field staff member, Gary Berger. Welcome to the pod.
What's happening?
Man, I'm whenever I think of spring turkey hunting, I immediately think of the first time you and I met, and ever since then, I mean, amongst other things, you do a lot of other things other than spring turkey, but spring turkey, you're obsessed, my friend. So I figured it was very, very necessary to get you on board here about a few weeks out before most seasons across the United States open up. What do you think?
It can't come soon enough, but I'm already walking around with a diaphragm call in my pocket at all times.
Oh, man. So today I want to talk about all things spring turkey, but in last pod you were on, for those that want to dial back and listen, it certainly was a fan favorite, bow hunting gobblers, I believe the title was. It was last year. It was in May, I believe, somewhere in there. It was right in the midst of turkey season, I think.
Yep.
So then we talked specifically about bow. Today we're going to talk about all things spring turkey. So scouting, we'll talk about, we'll get into private land, public land. We'll talk about call sequences, decoy setups, different weapons to use, strategies, what not to do, you name it. All right?
I'm in.
All right. What about, primarily, and you're also a commercial guide, and so this year you'll be taking groups out. Tell us a little about that to kick things off.
Every year I usually go, knock my bird down or end up taking buddies and guiding multiple buddies a year to get their birds, and you're just kind of like, well, why not?
So this year, you're booking dates, you're booking groups or individuals?
Yeah. Yep. I'm just going to, do what I do anyways, just now as a legit, start of a business.
Nice. And
a couple aspects to the whole business that, it's going to start out with turkeys, and then I've got the two bird dogs. So we'll be, transitioning in the fall to some upland stuff and whatnot. So it's just a start.
It's exciting, man. I think from what I've seen, now we've hunted and fished together quite a bit, but the number of different times that we've brought out either members that were newer to a certain thing, or when I was newer to a certain hunting or fishing thing that targeting, doing something, you and anybody that you brought around have always been, it's just super helpful, patient, the whole thing. So I know that's going to go real well. Let's talk about public land versus private land. And you do both. So
yep.
We're in March right now. Most seasons don't open till April. What are you doing? You're talking about walking around with a diaphragm call. What are you doing on, let's start with public, with, how are you scouting? What are you preparing for right now?
So public, I'm just, driving through known areas where I know there's turkeys, kind of waiting on the transition of, they're still not quite into their spring pattern. So just like whitetails, they kind of have their, their summer, their winter, and their spring pattern and areas. It sounds silly, but my main day job, I drive past this one big tree, and when they get in their spring pattern, that tree is full of turkeys every morning when I drive by, roosted up.
Mm.
So I haven't seen any in that tree yet, but I know it's coming here pretty soon. I was telling you earlier, yesterday I was driving around at work and saw some turkeys out in the front yard of a residential area, and there's a Jake full fanned out, and like I said, I'd keep that diaphragm in my pocket, pulled that out, give him a few cuts and yelps, and he started hammering at me, gobbling his head off. So for the, you know, right now it's just kind of going to my spots that I know turkeys are usually at in the spring and just trying to get eyes on them. And, you know, if I got the time, if I can stop and pull over and throw a soft yelp in the woods or something, see if I can get something to call back at me, see if that works. But I think with our crazy weather here in Michigan lately, we're a touch early on them being fully fired up. You know, that one yesterday, it was just a beautiful day out. So it was just perfect. It was on the back end of a stormy, windy, you know, high pressure storm that came through. And then that next day was beautiful, sunny, warm, just felt like turkey season.
Man, oh man, this is such an exciting time. What about, so you mentioned your known spots. You obviously had to do some work to find those known spots. What's your suggestion or advice on getting out there and identifying turkey sign or where they might even be, starting with, I don't know, looking on a map and then going in?
Well, yeah, most of it's boots on the ground. There's a lot of e-scouting nowadays, but e-scouting can't tell you what the underbrush looks like. So you could see from an aerial, nice mature timber, you know, where turkeys might want to roost near a field, but then you get there and it's so thick, there ain't no way a turkey's going to really go through there. You know, the underbrush is just way too thick. But it is definitely looking for those things, you know, you're looking for the mature timber where they're going to want to roost. They like it a little bit open so they can fly up and fly down pretty easily for their roost. And then especially if there's ag fields anywhere near, they're going to be on those, and just fields in general, because first thing in the spring, you know, flowers start blooming and those fields fill up with bugs, and the turkeys are going to be in there eating the bugs.
Yeah, they love those. They love those. You know, most of the days spending out walking around ag, or mornings and evenings and whatnot, and it's easy to fly up to a nearby roosting tree. What about the fields are pretty obvious. You can drive by and see if there's turkey out there. And the few times I've gone out for opening day and tried going on public and fields, you know, I've gotten there super early, you know, first or second truck there and gotten out and gotten set up where I want to be. But, you know, between that time and heck, an hour after shoot light, there's, you know, goes from two trucks to literally 40 trucks parked all over the place and people everywhere. What about getting up and going to find those more unknown spots inside of woods? Is it the topography or any like hillies or edges or certain things that you're looking for?
Yeah, we don't. So here in like Southeast Michigan, we don't have too much topography. There might be a couple little hills, but nothing to, not like like a turkey hunt in Virginia and there's full on hollers. And just even like, you know, Southeast Ohio, where me and you have deer hunted, like that is topography land, huge hills, like many mountains, in fact, you know, so that you would work the topography more. Around here, you're going to look for those edges, those transitions. Pre-season, you want to be able to find any oak trees, if, you know, over time, you start to learn where there's going to be clover growing and on edges of fields and stuff like that. And you're just going to be looking for that. And when it comes to, you know, combat hunting on public land, the best thing you can do is just boots on the ground, looking for sign, looking for turkey scratches in the woods. You know, you'll be walking through the woods and all of a sudden it just looks like someone was raking up the leaves. And that's 9 times out of 10, it's usually turkeys.
Yeah, especially scratching.
They're scratching for grubs and bugs and acorns that were missed and just looking for some food.
Yeah.
That's usually a good indication you're in the right area. Obviously, tracks, feathers. If you find like trails and stuff, you can find they like to dust themselves, you know, for bugs and whatnot. So sandy areas, you know, like places I hunt up north more, it's a little sandier, and you'll find where they dust bath, you know, dust bathe on the edge of a trail or in a field. So you're just looking for all those and trying to get ahead of people. And then for when it's go time, it's just best chances knowing where those birds want to roost and actually putting them to bed and being able to sneak in there way, way early the next morning. If you can put them to bed, sneak in there undetected, as close as you're comfortable with. Because I've gotten as close as 20 yards from the tree that they were in, not on purpose, but it worked out. But that's risky because you can bump them off the roost doing that. But I generally try to get somewhere around 100 yards or just under 100 yards from the roost if I can.
Yep, that makes sense. And with scouting still, you, at least up in Michigan and some of that Midwest, northern states, you can count on at least a dusting or, you know, one more, I don't know, snow cover where that's my favorite thing to see where they're walking. And, you get like a day of tracks or a morning of tracks from, what they were walking back to roost from the night before. I love that. But now we're talking about that time of year where they start moving away from the big groups and, you know, the hierarchy's established, you know, they're getting a little more territorial and not really tolerant of other, Jakes and Toms and stuff, and who gets to breed and who doesn't. So talk a little about how that breakup happens here.
Yeah, the Toms will start to, from my experience, what I've seen, especially like through just watching through trail cam and known areas, you'll have like a big bachelor group. And then all of a sudden the Jakes and like the year and a half old birds will be on their own, like in a group. And then you'll get like a pair of 2 year olds. And then you'll always have like that boss Tom that just will not tolerate any other bird near him. And you know, that's usually the dude you want, but it all depends on your flock and where it's at population wise. But what people don't usually realize too is you got your boss hens. You'll have your top of the pecking order hens, and she'll start kicking her Jakes that have been hanging around, and other hens that she'll start kicking them around, and they're all around in the spring. They start really, if you're out in the woods, man, you all of a sudden you'll just hear, seems like all hell's breaking loose, and you just hear a bunch of aggressive purring and clucking and leaves rustling, and it's just turkeys chasing each other, just trying to figure it out.
What are those? We have Toms and Jakes. Is it Jills and Jennies?
Yeah, I've heard people call them that. I've just always Toms, Jakes, and Hens.
Yeah. Well, you like during early season hunting, I mean, there's certainly you see the smaller hens.
For sure.
Those immature ones, and they're it's interesting. I've been out there where they've ran right next to me. And it's just like a solo, she's lost, little immature. So, well, here's a question for you. when so that's finding out some spots and what to look for and yeah, well, you know what? Actually, before I get into the calling sequence, how about a private land? Because you're also hunting private land. You also deer hunt that private land. So you've had cameras out there and you see what activity is. But are you into any food plotting? Are you transitioning any of your deer food plots into like a spring turkey crop?
Well, it's kind of dual purpose, but yeah, the short answer, yes. But you know, right now here in the next like week or so, I'm definitely going to get out to my properties and try to till some dirt. And, you know, my plot that's left over from last year, I usually, you know, my kill plot is usually a lot of root vegetables, radishes and turnips and such, and, letting them rot into the soil and then tilling them into the soil releases a whole lot of nitrogen in the soil. Some old time farmers call it poor man's nitrogen. You let it just rot into it. And I mean, it just supercharges whatever you plant right after. And for me, that's going to be a few different, you know, a clover mix and then maybe a little alfalfa mixed in there. It's going to bring my turkeys in a lot and get a little pattern on my turkeys. But it's also going to be, I'm already starting to think about deer season. My bucks are going to start growing their antlers here pretty soon. And that's going to supercharge the protein for their antler growth and help them out.
I swear, we're trying to, it doesn't matter if we're talking about fishing or trapping or turkey hunting, upland game, hiking, back. It doesn't matter. Somehow, some way, whitetails always making the conversation.
Oh yeah, it's just a never ending cycle for me.
Oh,
you know, man. When I'm out bird hunting with the dogs, I'm using that as an opportunity to scout. I'm looking for,
of course,
buck sign while I'm out there too, and turkey sign. So just all of that. And then the other thing with my private properties too is I can't, when you have a private property and you're surrounded by private properties, there's certain areas that the turkeys just kind of always roost in. So you kind of know where their roosts are going to be, and you can kind of, it's kind of like, you just set up business as usual. You know, I know they're roosted over there. We're going to go sit under this tree. We'll pull one in for sure. You know?
Yep. Are you ever using permanent stand or not stands, but permanent blinds for private property? Or are you mobile, and what's that look like out there? I saw you shoot a deer at a fallen tree with no blind. So is it a similar concept there with turkey hunting, or are you doing pop-ups, or are you brushing in?
Oh, a little bit of everything. So depending, you know, if I take somebody out and they're not well versed into hunting and sitting still and not moving, you know, we'll put up a pop up and really help out with the movement, you know, concealing the movement of us. But like last year, when I was bow hunting for them, I'm just in one of those little turkey chairs that, you know, fold out turkey chair, just gets your butt a couple inches off the ground. And I'm just sitting next to a tree with a little brush blind that I fab up real quick in front of me. And I am just in full camo on the ground, no blind, just basically some sticks in front of me and decoys it 5 yards out in front of me.
Oh, five. Oh, yeah, because it's a bow.
Yeah, well, I mean, I reached out and touched them when I'm, you know, body shooting them. But like last year, I was trying to, really trying to get on film, decapitating one with a big decap broadhead.
Yep.
I've done it before in the past. I just don't have it on film. Hmm.
Well, this year we could probably be able to change that one.
That's the goal for sure.
I think you'll be out in the woods a lot more than you were able to last year. But, yeah, that, That's pretty neat. So before, well, let's talk about that actually. Weapon choice. What are you suggesting people use for, if they're getting out for the first time?
So it's going to start with, I'm going to say a shotgun, and then I'm going to go with, first you got to select your gauge, you know, what's comfortable for, you know, a smaller person, a woman or a kid, I'm going to suggest a 20 gauge or even a 410 if need be, you know.
Okay.
And then it's just shot, you know, your shot size is all that really matters. And then biggest thing is you don't want anybody to go out there without personally patterning the gun. So any buddies or anything I've taken, or like my nephew, I've taken him out and had him shoot the gun so he can see what it feels like, how to aim, everything. Not just like, hey, I set it in, you're good to go.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, because they don't know if they're aiming. And you know, I've heard rule is like, you know, when you're patterning it, you want at least 20 BBs to be in that head.
Yes. Yep.
And if you're it depends on the sights and where they're aiming, and are they aiming like at shoulder connection? Are they aiming right for the head? How good of a shot they are? What kind of shot they're using?
I tell everybody when you're using, just a bird barrel on a shotgun, so you just got a single bead or a double bead you line up, you want to put that bead where the feathers meet the skin on their necks. You want to be able to see their head above, just above your bead. If you can see their head, let her rip, tater chip. I can't tell you how many times I've gone out with people and they shoot and the bird takes off running or flying away, and they're like, I put the bead right on their head. Well, they're putting the bead, like trying to put the bead right on the bird's eye. And if they're not cheeked down to the stock of the gun all the way properly, 9 times out of 10, when they do that, they end up shooting over the top of the bird. Bird takes off unscathed and a little wiser now. Now you're just educating birds.
Yeah, I've missed, probably when I took that shot, there was a bunch of brush and stuff, and it was, you know, questionable, but it was certainly doable. And I just made a poor shot, but I put the bead on the head. And then since then I've been putting it where, like just where the neck actually starts meeting the body. It's usually such a tight pattern still that, maybe a BB goes through, meat, but for the most part, like it's taking a chunk of neck out and they're going down right away. And so it's all around their neck and their head, but they drop down real fast versus, my first turkey I ever shot was, a pretty far shot, and it knocked feathers off, but he got up and flew away and I had to go knock it down in the woods on the ground.
It all depends on your shot, your choke.
Yeah.
You know, what rounds are you running?
How about choke wise? What are you recommending?
You got to kind of play around with the specific gun and the specific load that you're going to be running. You know, my old faithful is I always usually run Remington Nitro turkeys. Those have always been good to me. When the TSS loads came out, I was curious about them, and the wife didn't like it, but I went and spent a couple $100 on shell until I bought every gauge and a couple boxes of every gauge and every shot size, because it was science time for me. I was like, let's see, what's the hype about? Why these are so much money? And I went and patterned them all out of all of my shotguns with different chokes, different ranges. And I shot a, I took a Tom out at 70 yards with a full choke in my 12 gauge with those TSSs. Mm. So they can reach out and touch something. And usually I tell, if you know, no more open of a choke than a modified. And then usually I'd rather, if people have a full choke, bring your full choke. Because chances are, when you don't have that full choke, that gobbler is going to hang up at 40 yards and he's not going to budge.
Yeah.
Where if you got a mod, you're like, that is risky business. But if you got a full, you're like, we got this guy.
Yeah. Yeah, that I would certainly recommend a full or just get a turkey choke, which is even tighter.
Yeah.
And it's pretty easy. I mean, I've seen you direct a few people on different sites to pull off different equipment and whatnot. And it's pretty self-explanatory. Like what kind of gun you have, and then match up what's the recommended or the one built by that manufacturer or the aftermarket manufacturer builds specific ones for different firearm manufacturers, and you can match it up pretty good.
I mean, now, even nowadays, you can even hop on social media. You know, it's nothing to hop on Facebook and go, hey, everybody, on a turkey site, you go, hey, I got a Benelli Super Black Eagle 2, 12-gauge. I'm going to be running 3.5-inch shells. I'll be running, you know, TSS, or you tell them what round you're planning on running. What's everybody's opinion? What's the best choke for that? And you'll get all kinds of people going, hey, I run that same setup with, you know, a pattern master, or, you know, I got this Carlson cremator that I run. And, you know, then you see, and a lot of people even, you know, post like, hey, here's my, I patterned it and this is my target at 40 yards with it. And they'll show you how they shot and everything.
And how about bows?
Now, when it comes to bow, your first decision is, are you aiming for, are you trying for body shots, or are you trying to decap birds? Because you could go out there with both arrow setups, but you're going to have a hard time scrambling to re-knock an arrow and everything else.
Mm.
So if you're going for decap, you're going to want to set up an arrow for it. So you would want to pick, you'd want to get the stiffest arrow you can. So like, for instance, my setup, I normally shoot a 300 spine arrow with my compound for deer and, you know, big game. I actually will run a 200 spine arrow because it's a lot stiffer. So the reason I want it to be stiffer is because Archer's paradox, when you shoot, the arrow is flexing. If you ever see a slow-mo of an arrow being released, it's flexing hard while it's in flight. Well, with getting a stiffer arrow, that kind of eliminates a lot of that flex. So it's nice and stiff. Because if it's flexing, that means that broadhead's moving up and down. That broadhead's moving around in the air, you know?
So yeah, so is that turkey's head.
if I'm trying to shoot something the size of a racquetball, I need that thing to be as accurate as possible. And then the other thing is, you got to find out how accurate you are with your setup. So what I found, because those decap broadheads, the blades are really big, really sensitive, really thin. So you don't want to just shoot them into a regular target. So what I found is, you go to Walmart or dollar store or whatever, get a couple, you know, super cheap cotton pillows, you know, the ones stuffed with the synthetic cotton, and you can just draw a turkey head on it and put it in front of your target, and it'll dissipate that kinetic energy, that you won't blow through those pillows, but it's going to let you shoot a target, and it's not going to destroy your broadhead. Now, don't get me wrong. You're going to get a couple broadheads, and I preach to everyone sharpness of blades. Those broadheads aren't going to be, if you really wanted to, you could probably resharpen those broadheads. But I would designate one to practice with so it can be dulled and it's no big deal. And then you have a fresh one to hunt with.
Yeah.
That makes sense. If you're going the other route, you're going body shots. Well, back to the head shots. You're going to have to find out where you're comfortable range-wise. Me, personally, I want a bird 10 yards and under for me to decap.
That's with a compound or a recurve, or does it matter distance-wise whether you're using either or?
Well, yeah, for sure. Cause I mean, just like deer hunt, no matter what, you're going to be more efficient, more accurate at a further distance with, your compound than you would your recurve. Turkey I shot with my recurve was 8 yards away, and that was a body shot. And he did a backflip and he went maybe 4 yards and piled up in brush. And that was it. And I've also shot turkeys in the body in the fall, because we have a fall season here in Michigan. And then the fall season, you can shoot hens. You're allowed any turkey. And I have my longest shot on a turkey here in the fall was 50 yards, center punched a hen, just picked the biggest hen in the group and gave her the business. So no way I was doing that with a recurve of 50 yards. You know, ethically, you know, responsibly, where with my compound, I practice out to 80, 90 yards, even, you know, some 100-yard shots. I'm not going to take those kind of shots on an animal, but when you practice at 80, 90 yards, 60 is nothing, 50 is nothing.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That is ridiculous. That's awesome.
But when it comes to body shots now,
yeah,
you're gonna want to choose the right broadhead. I like a 3-blade mechanical for body shots. I just feel like you can get a touch more accurate and they kind of do a little bit more devastation from what I've seen and experienced. And then it's gonna be again, what are you comfortable with? If you wanna, most people are no more than 20 yards on a body shot, you know? So, and that's all the stuff you have to think about when you're setting up and you're setting up decoys. Cause especially with a bow, you're going to want a decoy to distract the bird so you can draw back. And, so like I've told you, like when I'm decapping birds, I'm putting my decoys, you know, 5 yards away. If that, you know, they're close.
And how are you setting them up, like position wise, facing which way? And then how does that correlate to how you're trying to get that bird to be positioned in order for you to take a shot where you want that placement to be?
So in my experience, I never really want a decoy facing me, like facing towards me. I've seen people do it and it works out fine, but I can't tell you how many times I've watched birds come in and they always they either come in ready for a fight and start kicking the crap out of the decoy, or they come in and size up the decoy and they do a circle around the decoy. So they usually come around the back of the decoy, and usually right then, if they're doing that, their attention is on that decoy, and I usually use that to draw. And by the time they get around to the front of the decoy, I got their number, you know?
And then once, so, like, where do you want that? Do you want it facing you? Would you ever shoot head on? Would you take a side shot, and is it going like at the heart, and where is the heart? Or if it was facing away from you, would you ever take a shot then? What What's your opinion on different positions and placement?
There's a good shot on a turkey just about any which way he's standing. Definitely some better than others. Kind of, I mean, like a deer, perfectly broadside. That's what you want, definitely.
Straight through the middle, or what are you trying to hit?
So what the old timers used to say, if you hit them low, they go. If you hit them high, they die. So what you do is when they're puffed out, a big recommendation is Google kill shot on a tom turkey with a bow, and you'll find all kinds of diagrams showing when they are fully fanned out, they look gigantic, and they are nowhere near as big as they look. And their kill zone is very small. It's not very big at all. So a good rule of thumb that I always have done is find the leg, go up the leg, and get to about the halfway point of the body, and then just go a scotch above halfway. Just kind of center up from the leg, but then a touch high.
Yeah, they make themselves look real big compared to they're a big bird. An Eastern Tom is pretty big, but
yeah,
it looks gigantic, like you said, when it's strutted up.
Yeah, when they're full strut, man, you don't. And in the heat of the moment, your heart's thumping out your chest. You're like,
oh yeah,
the thing's huge.
Oh yeah. And
then I've seen a bunch of people miss them. I've had friends miss them with bows. And they're like, dude, I center punched them. And I'm like, no, man, you shot nothing but feathers.
How many decoys are you using?
It all depends on the time of the season. So starting out in the early bit of the season, I will run I have a feeder hen, a lay down hen, and then a 3/4 strut Jake. And what I'll do is I'll take that Jake and put him over top that lay down hen, make him look like he's about to breed her. And then to really amp it up, what I've done is I've gotten go to a hobby store, get like Glacier White, like modeling paint, and you know that decoy comes with a nice bright red and blue head. We'll white out some of that red, because what I'm doing is I'm painting a picture. That Tom's going to come out, see that Jake on top of that hen, and when he sees that his head's not bright red, nothing but red and blue, that means one thing. That means that the blood's leaving that bird's head to go elsewhere for breeding. So now it's for real, for real. That bird is about to breed. I've got to go kick him off of her. So it's just little stuff like that. You can set them off a little bit more with a little bit of white on their head, a little bit more white than red. And then, so I'll run that in the early season. Once you start getting towards the late season, for some reason, you know, toms start getting pretty wary. They get, you know, they're kind of cagey. They've been chased by people and they've been fighting other birds. And, you know, it's not as intense as the rut for deer where they don't eat at all, but they're still a little run down and a little beat up, some of them. So I kind of, when that happens, like I leave the Jake decoy in the truck or at home. You know, I don't want the intimidation. I just want a hot hen. I don't want it to be competition. And towards the end of the season, they're kind of really big on searching for those last hens that are trying to breed. So I try to just run just a hen or two decoy in that towards the latter part of the season.
Do you, does your strategy change at all? Morning setup, afternoon setup, evening setup, or does it all run pretty much the same?
No, it'll change because the birds do different stuff throughout the day as well. So you know, I'm going to, first thing in the morning, I'm going to try to be close to the roost. And then, you know, midday, I'd like to be not too far from some water, because they're probably, the heat of the day, they're probably going to want to get a drink, and they're just going to be pecking around and eating and grazing all day. So I want to, if I can find those food sources and know where they're eating and what they're eating, I want to be near some of those. And then in the afternoon, it's kind of the reverse of the morning. I want to be back at that roost, you know, kind of the same deal, just waiting for them to come back to the roost, and hopefully I'm at the right roost.
Do you find that they roost on private land and public? Well, private land, you said that they kind of roost in a similar area. Would you say it's the same on public as well?
They do on public. They do. I just, in my experience, it's just, I think it's just the pressure. They get more pressure on the public land, so it's not as tight as the private. Like on my private lands, I can tell you the group of trees that they're going to be in. Now in public, they'll be in that same general area, because it's usually a good area for roosting. So they kind of like being in that area to roost. You know, it's conducive to what they're looking for. But not always. Sometimes you got to chase them down and find out where they might roost somewhere else. You know, it is always kind of a guessing game, but they're also kind of creatures of habit, and they're usually in the same general area.
Okay. Now let's, we're getting down to wrap up time here, but I want to, I love talking about different, I'm a sucker for different turkey calls. I can't, you know, every time I go into a store, I'm walking out with, you know, I want to either walk out, or I actually do walk out with some sort of diaphragm call or a slate or a locator call, you name it. What's your go-to indicator call, locator call?
So here in Michigan, I know a lot of people run a crow call, but here in Michigan, in Southeast Michigan, I feel like we have so many dang crows. I've never even heard a gobble to a crow, as crazy as it sounds, but a lot of the properties I hunt first thing in the morning, it ain't nothing to see a couple hundred crows on the tops of the trees going absolutely bonkers. So when it comes to a locator call, no matter the time of day, I'll hit them with an owl hoot. They tend to like that in our area. See, and I'm a firm believer in it, and it does matter what areas you are in, because I got some buddies that, you know, hunt more down south, and they're like, don't even bother hooting an owl because they won't call back to it. And I'm like, that's insane, because they'll almost every time they'll gobble back at it here.
Oh yeah.
So owl is a big go-to. If I'm trying to put birds to bed, you can do a little bit of yelping and stuff, but you don't want too much, because all you're doing is putting that bird's attention, thinking there's another bird there. When I'm trying to put him to bed, I really just want to shot gobble them. So I do a lot of the owl hooting, and then in the morning I'll owl hoot too when they're on the roost, and I'll wait until I start hearing hens. When you start hearing hens a little bit on the roost, or, you know, it just starts really getting light, then you start those nice soft tree yelps and purrs and clucks. And then sometimes I'll even do a fly down sequence with my calling, just super excited, yelping and clucking, and take my hat and slap it against my leg. It sounds like, you know, somewhat sounds like wings coming down.
Yeah.
And I've heard them, you know, I've done it before and had a gobbler, you know, within 100 yards. And right after I do that, I hear him fly down, because he's like, oh man, she's down, I got to be down.
Oh man, I love it. Are you, do you, mouth call or use a some sort of device to owl hoot?
I've had the hooter, you know, it's black. It looks like a barrel. I think you bought one not long ago.
Yeah, I did a little video on it.
I've had those. I have like three of them. You'd open my junk drawer, man, there's 36 different turkey calls in there. Like, yeah, I'm a sucker for a turkey call, and someone will come out with a new cut or a new, you know, the new hot call this year. I'm like, well, I gotta see what that sounds like.
Oh yeah.
But I've done those. I've got the blow through owl hooters, but I kind of gave up on those. I'm just, instead of spending the money on those and having another thing in my pockets, I just practice doing the owl hoot by mouth. It doesn't have to be perfect. It's just got to sound somewhat, just like any call. And the more you do it, the more you practice it, the more you can get the tone you want, the more, you know, realistic it can sound.
Oh, putting you on the spot here. What, we got to hear it. What do you got?
Oh man, I'll try it out.
Oh yeah. There we go. In the morning or in the midday too?
Morning, midday, they'll answer to it. But midday, I'm going to do a lot more hen calling, clucking and, you know, yelping, kind of just locator, just trying to get them to respond like, hey, I'm over here.
When you're hitting that owl from your mouth, are you trying to project it somehow or not cuff your hands over your mouth? What's that strategy?
I'll
muffle it
usually,
at all.
Usually just, you know, no hands, open mouth, and I mean, you're chicken necking, you know, you're just trying to like shoot that sound out of you, you know, and trying to get that right sound. But for the most part, just that. And then you don't even have to do a perfect owl call like that. Just a single hoot. And then with the, I don't know if you've ever heard an owl call, but they'll have like an awe call at the end, like, ah, 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 ah.
Oh, yeah.
You can just do just a whoo, ah, and they'll sound off to that.
Yeah. They're so crazy. And owls are crazy too, because everybody thinks like the hoot, hoot, you know, whoo, whoo, whoo. But like that whole whoo, ah, and then like, whoo, 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 you know, it's just all, there's so many different, and you're like, is that an owl? What in the world is that thing? And then they'll make like a clearly identifiable owl sound, and it's bonkers. But sometimes those turkeys will sound off like at the first note. And so if you do, I've done like too long of a sequence, and someone I'm with are like, did you hear that? And I'm like, no, I didn't hear that, because they hit right at that first or, you know, second of the call sequence. And then when you're done, you're listening, they don't, you know, so I guess it's, you know, shorter, a lot of times shorter is better to start.
That's why I do that single hoot and ah at the end, because it's quick, short, gives you time to hear if he's cutting you off or not.
Mm. How about, clucking, cutting? Do you have your, diaphragm on you right now?
I don't think I have it on me right now. I think it's in my car.
Okay. Hey, good place for it. Driving around, people looking at you like you're crazy at the stoplights and whatnot.
Oh,
I like windows down, man. Windows down, just let it rip. I sound like, I got the duck calls going, the turkey. People think I'm ridiculous because, one, I sound ridiculous. But, two, I'm trying to get better.
Yeah, the only way to get better is to practice, to keep blowing. And you don't, I mean, you can spoil a hunt doing all, only you're practicing while you're hunting, you know.
Right.
I know a couple guys like that you know, they don't touch their turkey calls or their goose calls or their duck calls till they're in the field. And nine times out of 10, they'll hit it and they'll be like, yeah, bud, why don't you go ahead and put that back in your backpack?
Oh, man. Well, we covered a lot. We covered a lot of ground here. Spring turkey. I can't wait. I'm so excited. And going down to Texas and hearing those Rios and seeing them going to roost. And well, even during trapping season, there's one photo that I've been keeping close to the vest, but, one of my trail cams caught me on camera out in, I was going to check a trap. I was actually going to freshen it up. And, man, these turkeys just ripped out of this tree. Obviously I walked underneath a roost and they were already up there. It was pretty interesting. They must've got up there pretty early, but it scared the bejesus out of me. I flipped back and looked up and, you know, hand on my gun kind of thing. It's like, oh, it scared me. And this in the trail cam just got a beautiful picture of me looking absolutely terrified.
Oh, I can't tell you how many times turkeys have scared me. Oh, I've gotten in the tree deer hunting, climb the tree with a climber, just get up there in the dark and it's just starting to get light, and you know, you always get that kind of little eerie feeling walking through the woods at night. You're like, ah, I'm safe. I'm in the tree. And then all of a sudden, a turkey flies out from above my head. Just,
oh, it's loud.
Fucking just scare the daylights out of you, man.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's awesome. I can't wait for the season. I'm pumped to get out there and hunt with you. I know members of Network Outdoors are too. And now that you've got the commercial guide license, your information and rates and availability, will be going out to those that are on our mailing list, that are members and non-members. So if you're interested in connecting with Gary on any questions, the guys that, I mean, you start talking about bow, archery, anything, it's be prepared to learn a few things and have a phenomenal conversation. But he's one of those guys that are always there to help. And that's why I want him to be on the podcast today. So, hey man, thank you so much. What are some final thoughts? Anything to share with the listeners getting ready for turkey season here?
Don't wait till the last minute. Get your stuff ready, dust it off, get those calls out, get to practicing, tuning them up. You got to talk that sweet talk to them. Nothing that can replace boots on the ground when it comes to scouting.
Absolutely. Can't beat scouting. Get out there. Enjoy the thunder turkey, thunder chicken woods. Gary, hey, man, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being on today.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me.
See you in the woods. Until next time, signing off.